to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Yeah. I'm going to try this.
Material week. Prepared.
Guys, I'm sick.
Oh, yeah, by the way, the reason we're late this week.
It's totally my fault. Like, we couldn't record because every time Ben's like, I'm free, I was like, I'm sick.
Gabs liked Doomsday Book so much.
I decided to get the Black Plague.
Yeah, she went ahead and got herself a plague.
I thought it'd be fun. Turns out it is not fun. I do not recommend it. So we are recording tonight, even though I am not 100% recovered, but I don't think I sound too bad, so get over it. Or whatever.
I'll run some audio magic, make you sound healthy. Like I'm capable of that kind of audio magic.
Maybe cut out my coughs.
I can
replace
do that.
Them with, like, Mario coin collecting noises.
Ooh, I kind of like that. Or I was thinking just, like, spring noises. Boing, boing.
Zelda noises. I don't know. There are a lot of options.
We'll see.
So this week, we read Catching Fire by Suzanne Collins, the second book in the Hunger Games trilogy. A book that most people have now heard of.
Yes. A book that is also going to be in movie form in the very near future.
I think, well, I guess if we air this tomorrow, it comes out today.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
I did actually finally see a preview for it, so they are marketing it.
I assume they're marketing the shit out of it, just probably not.
We don't watch enough TV.
Is it just not the venues where I am? I mean, the only TV I watch is live sports, and that's
not really the audience.
It's probably not exactly the same demographic. I'm a little surprised it hasn't popped up at all during an NFL broadcast or something, but I guess I have to do a lot of movie trailers during those, though.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, I don't think we saw any when we were watching this week.
Do marketing people believe that football fans don't watch movies?
I don't know.
What percentage of people watching the NFL broadcast are people with, even if you wanted to restrict it to the stereotypical men, which is less and less true with those broadcasts, how many of them have kids?
Yeah, like a 14-year-old watching with them. Right. Be like, Catching Fire!
Right. Dad! Oh, fine, we'll go.
Jesus. We'll go next week before the game.
That's right.
Okay. Good point. I have noticed the NFL this year finally did start going, women watch it too.
Yeah.
Actually seeing commercials that market to women. It's weird. Yeah, so the movie's coming out today or tomorrow or this weekend or whatever, whenever you're listening to it. Fun fact, I was telling Ben, so I learned that Jamie Oliver, the twat chef guy, who named all his kids stupid hippie names. I don't like him, I think he's stupid.
Really?
But
I couldn't tell.
he's the guy behind The Naked Chef, I guess.
Ah.
I learned, looking at his Wikipedia page and reading the names of his dumb children, that he is dyslexic, and apparently he read his first book, like, 2 years ago or something because of that, and the first book he ever read was Catching Fire. And then I got really confused as to why the first book he ever read wasn't The Hunger Games.
Yes, well, allow us to explain why that's a strange choice.
I was like, what?
Maybe he listened to the first one on audiobook, I don't
like,
know.
Like, watched the movie or something? Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
But it's kind of weird. It's like, oh, I finally am going to read I'm going to read the fourth Harry Potter book.
Right.
It was my first novel ever. What are you doing, weirdo? So yeah, that's a fun fact. I just discovered it last night on Google.
Here's another fun fact. This book is not only a sequel, this episode is a sequel. Our very first episode.
That's true. Our very first episode ever was The Hunger Games.
Aww. Blah. Well, the first one you guys will ever get to hear.
Yeah. So, it was like a year and a half or more ago, though, so we are going to cover some of the same bases we covered in that first episode, because we're guessing that a lot of people probably didn't go back and listen to that episode, like, yesterday.
Though if you want to, we'll take the traffic.
Yeah, I mean, go for it. Go for it, man.
I haven't checked the stats. Maybe everybody went and listened to it knowing that this was coming.
I doubt that.
Like, anyway, where's my episode? I'm going to go listen to old ones.
I love this podcast so much. I don't think people are doing that. Most of the time nowadays, you hear, oh, yeah, I haven't listened to your latest one yet. I think we're actually losing listeners.
Must be my charming personality.
So, genre-wise, we're going to drop it into that general tub of YA novels, where the protagonist is a 17-year-old, and it's, you know, more or less kind of directed at teenagers.
Yeah.
It does have some deeper themes, but that doesn't mean it's not for teenagers.
Sure. Well, I mean, shoot, YA is probably even more open-ended than literary fiction as far as genres go.
Yeah.
It could be literally anything.
That's true.
As long as
the protagonist is between 12 and 19.
Basically, yes. Something for youngins to relate to.
Yeah. I did add the tag, it is dystopian literature, which gets us a little closer to a exact picture of it, at least. It is more precise, at least, than YA.
Yeah.
It's in the vague future.
Yes. The vague future, which we assume is a minimum of 75 years from this year.
Yeah, from 2030. Next year will be the first Hunger Games! Although, I guess the Hunger Games started because the districts rebelled, and we haven't formed into 12, 13 districts yet, so... Oh,
it's coming. It's called Obamacare.
2013, 13 districts. Coincidence? I think not.
That's right.
Thanks, Obama.
You think we can't see through that shit?
Goddamn socialist. We should post the Hunger Games as Obamacare thing.
We should. That'd be funny.
I'm okay with that. Our plot synopsis for the week is, don't worry, there's kissing. It's still a book for teens.
Hooray!
Ben and I were discussing how this book, upon a reread, surprisingly has much fewer Hunger Games in it than you would remember from having read it already.
Yes, I said, it's like the Hunger Games without the games. And Gab said, there are games. Fine.
There are some games. Takes up a couple chapters. It's in there.
There's some games and some hardcore fucking.
No.
No, there's
some innocent making out on the beach.
Yes.
Katniss feels a hunger within her, but then she doesn't even let Peeta touch her boobies, so she's a damn prude. Oh, I'm kidding. I don't know how much Peeta gropes Katniss, and I don't...
That's true.
I don't think we really need to know.
That portion was not described.
He finger-fucked me on the beach. And the whole district was watching. I'm just saying, when I was 17, I probably would have got to do that, even if I wasn't on grades. Like, there are cameras pointed on me right now, and the entire city, country is watching. Yeah, whatever.
Who gives a shit? You have, like, a 96% chance of being dead.
Yeah. Sex feels good. Whatever. Let's do this. So, yes, we can receive hate mail about me being a slut.
That's right.
I don't know, I did not mean to judge Katniss for her sexuality, by the way, so don't get mad at me for that. I don't think she's a prude or a slut, because I don't even know what her deal is, so I can't label her yet. Brief summary for anyone who hasn't read Catching Fire, I suppose, or who needs a refresher. So Katniss and Peeta won the last Hunger Games in the first book. They are now living in the Victor's Village in District 12 and getting a ton of money and food and basically everything they could ever want or need, which is really weird for Katniss. At the beginning, they have to go on a victory tour of all 12 districts and visit the capital. She mentions it's kind of the capital's way of rubbing the district's face in it and getting the capital excited about the games, because it's in between. It's, you know, 6 months out from the last ones and before the next ones. after the victory, or, like, on the victory tour, she starts seeing hints of rebellion and hearing about it, and the president even tells her that she has to try and stop the rebellion from happening, because it was her act of holding the berries out that was the defiance to the Capitol in the first place. And then a lot of the rest of the book is about that, the insurrection going on in the various districts, until they learn that the next Hunger Games are going to be all people who are victors of previous Hunger Games. And because Katniss is the only female victor from District 12, she's fucked, and she has to go back to the Hunger Games. And at the same time, there's this whole rebellion plot going on that no one tells her until, like, the last two pages of the book. Which is kind of shitty. But essentially, she goes into the games with all these other victors, they make an alliance. She doesn't know it's an alliance to get them all out alive, if possible, and the rebels break in and bust them out of there, so... More or less, there's the plot of Catching Fire, for better or for worse.
Yes. You know, I think we can all agree that the conditions of the Quarter Quell are a classic dick move.
Yeah, no fucking kidding. There's no way that President Snow didn't devise that just to fuck Katniss over.
Right? It and just so happens.
Oh, that this year is the where all the previous victors from all the other years. And... Yeah. It's like, no other victor has ever had to go back into the arena, and she wins, and the next year it's like, ha ha, you gotta go back. It's very rude. It's the definition of rude. It does definitely classify President Snow as just being a total douche. Yeah, so setting, like we said, is near future. It's in America. Has been renamed Panem, which is Latin for bread. I think we talked about the bread and circuses.
I think we did, yeah.
Last time. There are 12 districts. District 13 got bombed to the ground. Or did it? And it's all told from the point of view of Katniss, who is a charming young woman of 17.
Are you trying to write ad copy? What's going on?
Totally.
What a strange turn.
A charming young woman who is deft with a bow and arrow. No, I wouldn't really call Katniss charming.
No.
No offense to her, but...
I would call Katniss a lot of things, and some of them are even admirable, but charming is definitely not on the list. She doesn't know how to be, no, really.
She's too straightforward and, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
She can recognize it when she sees it, but she can't do it.
Yeah, yeah, she's like, man, PETA, he knows how to be charming. Yeah. And then she goes out there, and she's like, whatever. Fuck you. I want to hear your bullshit.
That's right.
Like, Katniss, you're great. You are great. The first time we talked about her in our Hunger Games podcast, we talked about, you know, the... Is she too masculine? Is she too feminine? Debate. Because Hunger Games is one of those rare crossovers that it is written by a woman and stars a girl, but everyone reads it.
That's right.
So I think when we read Harry Potter, we were talking about, oh, if it was Hermione Granger in the Chamber of Secrets, no one would read it. So that's not necessarily true. Unless you take this book to be the exception that proves the rule kind of thing.
Right.
I honestly couldn't think of anything else off the top of my head that is in a similar situation to the Hunger Games.
In terms of the combination of extremely widespread popularity with female protagonists in a YA setting.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, obviously we've read a couple things with female protagonists in the YA genre, but I don't think the Golden Compass was ever the phenomenon that... Hunger Games is.
And, yeah, I was gonna say.
I mean, Divergent, the Divergent series sells really well.
It is definitely picking up speed. I don't know how much of the readership is girls versus boys, though.
I would assume to be high up on the bestseller list for a few books for a long time that probably boys are reading it. But, yeah, I don't know what the numbers are like on it.
Now, if I could get, like, I think the main problem with the Divergent trilogy is I know it's, like, popular picking up steam, but I just don't know very many people who have read it. Whereas, like, with the Hunger Games, I know a bunch of people who have read it, so it's easier for me to say, oh, like, I know a ton of guys who have read the Hunger Games.
Right.
So, like, my own little niche kind of proves, like, I just read the Hunger Games. And, like, we're pretty much the only two people I know who have read Divergent. I guess Kim. And even you haven't read books 2 and 3, so.
That's true, but I'm not sure I'd want to.
Not because the protagonist is female.
No, nothing to do with that. More like the first book was kind of meh.
There's actually a movie coming out of that.
I heard that too.
So anyway, Katniss, back to Katniss. Weird, I imagine, you know, she hunts, she takes care of her family, she's, like, really strong and brave, and those are kind of traditionally masculine traits, although we were kind of like, if you think she's too masculine because of those things, that you're a dick who thinks women can't be strong and brave and hunt and take care of their families.
Correct.
And then, you know, on the other hand, she's nurturing and emotional and cares about people. And again, like, guys can do that too, so.
Right.
You know, to some degree, but if you're just looking at, like straight up character, like, stereotypes, then you can kind of divide her to masculine and feminine qualities. And we kind of decided that she's a mix of both, and.
Yeah, and I mean, masculine and feminine are such arbitrary descriptions and kind of hard to define anyway. I mean, I do think that I have trouble imagining a person with Katniss's combination of traits who's a dude, but maybe that's just because I've been reading her as a female character for these books.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when I think she has some femininity about her, I have trouble deciding why I think that. Because I don't think it's because she cares about things. I don't know, there's just something about her.
Well, I mean,
she seems believable as a girl, I guess, is what I'm really saying.
If you consider the fact that a female author and a 17-year-old girl, and you think her voice is believable, then that just might be why you consider her a girl, because yeah, right. Her voice sounds like a teenage girl.
Right.
So, maybe the masculine and feminine doesn't really have that much to do with it.
I think that's probably the truth.
But I was going to say, if you did consider her, like, badass main dude character, if there was a gender swap, I could totally see PETA as a girl.
Yeah, actually, so could I. Which is funny.
So,
maybe it's because he was written by a female author.
PETA! But I don't think Gail would make a very good girl. So.
No, but Gail doesn't make a very good anything.
No, he's kind of lame-o.
They cast him well, though, because as soon as he appeared on screen in the first movie, he was like, oh, I want to punch that dude in the face.
That's what Ben thought.
He's a very punchable face. No,
we are practical cat pee shippers.
Yes.
In that Katniss and PETA are getting it together, and you just have to get over it, and it's not because we're, like, crazy shippers, it's just, like, Gail sucks, and so that's what's gonna happen.
The love triangle in this story is not equilateral.
Yeah, it's really not. It's like 50% or more of the book is focused around Katniss and PETA surviving and relating to each other and trying to maneuver their relationship, and Gail's in there for like 2 chapters.
Right.
And then like a bunch of girls for some reason were like, Gail's so dreamy. I'm like, what the shit?
The scalene, we could name a trope after this. The scalene love triangle.
Or the scalene love triangle, nice.
The galene, perhaps.
The galene.
Love triangle.
Yeah, I think the Gail thing must have just been, in the first book, Katniss was like, Gail is traditionally handsome. And then you don't know that much about him, so you're just like, okay, I can now project everything onto him, swoon.
Right, whoever your traditionally handsome archetype is, imagine them in his
place. And we're burst ferns! Okay.
All right.
All right, you fun with that. So yeah, we have Katniss now as a winner of the Hunger Games, and she's starting to grow as a character. She's a touch a touch of the PTSD in this book.
As you would expect.
Yes, she has some lingering issues with her experience in the Hunger Games.
I think if she was just walking around all fine, I wouldn't like her or this book very much.
Well, that's something I think is interesting is some people's criticism of books 2 and 3 is they think Katniss is too screwed up and that she should be, especially in book 3 when she's really screwed up.
Yeah.
Which I'll try not to talk about that too much since we're mainly focused on this one. But people right. say, you know, well, she's too affected. I mean, she acted like a little more normal and did more stuff. I would like it better. I'm like, yeah, but if she didn't have PTSD, then she would be like a psychopath. She'd go to an arena and killed a bunch of people, right. like witnessed all this horrible gore and is like totally fine. Like, that's way creepier. Yeah,
she would have won the Hunger Games easily in the scenario where she has no PTSD, because she'd be a serial killer.
And that would be a story all on its own.
Yeah, right.
One girl, the stuff discovers her true path.
Hunger Games 19 was actually won by a serial killer.
Ben and I have been writing fictional previous Hunger Games. That's right. It's kind of a problem we're having right now.
Hunger Games prequels.
We're just going to write 73 Hunger Games prequels.
That's right.
Crazy.
Including the year where it was a musical.
Oh, God. Oh, there's so much insane shit you could do. It'd be quite fair. What was I going to say about Katniss? Oh, well, yeah, so she's having nightmares about, you know, like, Rue dying and the Tracker Jacker venom when she was hallucinating, going crazy, and Peeta almost dying, and the mutts at the end of the book that were all, like, weird half-hybrids of the previously dead
tributes. Those things creeped me out.
Really fucked yeah. up. Understandably so. And so she's dealing with, like, all these nightmares and what the Capitol did to her, and at the same time, trying to adjust to her new life now that she lives in this fancy house in the Victor's Village where they have a phone and electricity and all the food and money they could ever need, which has never been something her family has experienced before. Or
virtually anyone in District 12.
Yeah, anyone she knows. Yeah. So she's kind of trying to figure out what to do with herself, like, what her life means, like, what she's doing. And there's, like, a lot of discussion of how, even though she won the games, like, the Capitol's still managing to take away stuff from her life.
Oh, yeah, so, I mean, what the Capitol wants her to do with the rest of her life is to place herself on a shelf and they can dust her off and show her off as a trophy once a year.
Yeah. Marry Peeta, have some kids with them, you know, so they can revisit the love story and all that crap.
Yeah.
Is at the beginning, like, what they've taken away from her is her role as, like, supporter of her family, like, someone who goes out and hunts and, like, takes care of herself. They've kind of taken away her need to be self-sufficient, which was, like, a huge part of her identity before the games even started.
Yeah.
So, like, that's taken away, and then as the book goes along, she starts realizing that her entire life has been mapped out for her. Because in a conversation with Haymitch, she says, well, you know, if you want to keep the Capitol happy, you can never break up with Peeta. And she's like, oh, shit, like, my future isn't even my own.
Yep.
So, I think, as a reader, too, you start getting a really good idea of the reach of the Capitol, because when she wins at the end of book 1, you're just kind of like, oh, she won, she did it, she's good to go now. And then you realize that maybe being one of the ones who dies in the arena isn't as bad as you would think, because the victors all have to put up with a lot of shit.
Yeah, I mean, once you're selected, you're
effed.
Life is shitty. And it might be very short.
Yeah.
But it's not good.
That was something that, when I read the series for the first time, when I started reading Catching Fire, I was like, oh, like, I hadn't even considered all this other horrible shit that was going to happen to her in the aftermath. I was just like, oh, she won the Hunger Games, like, she's cool now.
Right. Well, most...
No, that's not going to happen.
I would say most adventure stories, great ones or otherwise, don't really leave you to consider the aftermath.
Yeah. The adventure ends and you're just like, okay, they're all happy now.
Right. Yay, the good guys won.
And that might be part of people's problem with this book and the next book, is that the first book is kind of the adventure, and then the yay, the good guys won, and then book two and three is like, here's how fucked up everything is after they win.
Well, right, because your more standard sequel would involve just coming back for another round of badassery.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, in the Hunger Games series, coming back for another round of badassery is not something you should be rooting for.
Yeah, like, if you, no matter how badass you consider Katniss, which, you know, she survived the Hunger Games, so I guess if you consider that a badass trait. But I don't think she considers that a badass trait, because she had to murder people.
Yeah, come on, come on, critics, what are you looking for? More Hunger Games? Are you the Capitol?
Yeah. And this is, like, the whole issue with the Hunger Games, is I think when you read it, if you're not careful, it's easy to become the Capitol. And it's something Susan Collins has talked about, I guess she was being hounded for a really long time for them to, they were, trying to make a video game of the Hunger Games, and she kept refusing them because she was like, you were not fucking putting the games in, like, that's, goes against that's everything so, these books are about.
It's kind of missing the point, yeah.
Yeah, and so they actually finally did end up making a Hunger Games video game, but it's like, you don't actually ever fight in the games. It's like a lot of problem-solving puzzle stuff, I guess. And you never go into the arena as a tribute.
I see.
Because she said, you were never making that game.
Right.
Because then people would be like...
Right. And if you are, you're not putting my name on it.
Yeah, that's not the point. And as much as I think the first book is really compelling and well-plotted and... really, I don't say fun, but interesting.
Fun's not the right word. I think compelling is actually a really good word for the first book.
It is very readable. And then you get into the second one, and that's when Collins really starts getting into, like, her MO for the series. She's like, okay, some of this was in book one, but now I'm going to start, you know, just overtly spelling some stuff out for you guys. And Katniss is kind of discovering all about rebellion and the political motivations and what she started, like, as the reader is, so.
Moving along, I suppose.
Yeah.
Her fellow survivor, Peeta.
Peeta! I've been saying that all
his,
my...
Or as Gabs likes to say.
Peeta!
Peeta!
I don't know why. He just seems like a Peeta to me. I like him, but...
Right.
Sometimes he's a dork.
He is a straightforward young man. Doesn't really hide his feelings, though he does. I guess he does play the talking game well when he's in the Capitol. So he seems to me. I mean, he's also dealing with some screwed upness from his Hunger Games experience, but his seems to largely revolve around Katniss. I mean, he's basically just put himself in her orbit.
Yeah, one of the things I thought was weird about Peeta is how much he and Katniss have to play up the romance angle for the Capitol, and I mean, he legitimately had a big old crush on her in the last book, but in this book, all of his talk about being in love and her being his world and stuff... it's not all in front of the cameras and for show. Like, he legitimately is saying that sometimes, and it's like, dude, what? Sometimes it's kind of overkill.
Yeah.
An example Ben and I were talking about was when they're on their tour and going to the games and stuff, they get into the habit of sleeping in the same bed, because when they're cuddling, they tend to have fewer nightmares. Or they can at least, like, help each other through their nightmares. And Katniss makes some comment about, well, you know, like, I wake you up a couple times a night, and you never wake me up when you have a nightmare. And he's like, well, most of my nightmares are about losing you, and when I wake up, I'm okay. And Ben and I were like, bleh. Lame. Like, you witnessed death and stuff, too. Don't you have any nightmares about that?
Yeah, shouldn't you have some non-Katniss PTSD to go along with your Katniss PTSD?
Because you spent a chunk of the games apart from each other, and I know he was acting to save her, but at the same time, like, you know, I appreciate that he's not just 100% like, I'm totally fine after the games because your love has saved me or some stupid crap. Oh, yeah, that would be
much worse.
And he does have, you know, a streak of the politically motivated in him with his paintings and the way, you know, like, he plays up a crowd so well. He's definitely not just, like, the nice guy. But at the same time, like, sometimes the way he feels about Katniss is just, like, too much.
It does come on very strong.
It's like, couldn't you sometimes acknowledge that she's making you mad and you don't like her?
Yeah, couldn't the practical side of him be like, damn it, woman, why do you have to ignore me for weeks on end and then turn it on for the camera? Like, I get it, I don't want to die either, but, like,
come on.
Can we maybe communicate between public appearances?
Yeah. Or maybe he could actually have nightmares that don't involve him.
Right.
Just saying.
Gosh, when I was running around with the career pack, I watched them murder several people. Don't feel good about it.
Yeah, I just let it happen, so. I think, did he go back and finish someone off even to prove himself?
He may have, actually.
So, yeah. I mean, he did some pretty shitty stuff.
Yep. But he did it in the name of love.
Lame. The other Katniss PETA interaction I don't love, I understand why he pulls the pregnancy card, because that's the number one way to gain people's sympathy.
I was gonna bring that up.
But at the same time, I was like, do we really need, like, the pregnant female protagonist?
Well, she's not, so.
That made me feel better about it, that she's not. But at the same time, and I think this is just me, because I understand, like, if you tell someone that you have a baby, then immediately they're gonna be like, oh no!
Right.
But I was like, that's the way you have to gain sympathy, is by being pregnant?
I was kind of like, oh, that's a ballsy bluff. And I was like, wait a minute, within a week. In theory, no one's gonna ever be able to prove it.
Right.
Unless she wins again, and then everyone's like, where's the baby?
Miscarriage.
Yeah. Oh, the stress of the games.
Or, I was thinking, like, after he said she was pregnant, I was kind of surprised Capitol doctors didn't go, like, probe her womb.
Yeah, right.
Like, are you really pregnant?
What is going on here?
And then PETA's like, for the cameras, I have to impregnate you, Katniss.
Maybe that was his strategy.
That would be creepy.
And it just didn't have time to play out.
PETA's actually a giant fucking creeper.
That's why he's coming on so strong. He has no self-restraint.
Oh, we goodness. Figured it out.
Cracked the code.
So aside from those two, we have a couple other characters worth mentioning, probably. Haymitch, who you'll remember is their mentor. He's the only other winner from District 12. He's a massive alcoholic from years of watching all the kids he's training die and being depressed.
Yeah.
Which, you know, fair enough.
Fair enough.
I'd say the big thing they learn about Haymitch in this book is they get sent a bunch of old copies of previous games to watch, since they're going to have to be fighting other victors. And Katniss and PETA end up watching the games that Haymitch won, and they learn that he won it kind of by trickery. And in the Capitol's eyes, kind of in the same way that Katniss and PETA managed to win, where he found the edge of the arena as a force field and then used the force field to finish the job for him, of killing off the last other person. And in the Capitol's eyes, this was a big act of rebellion by showing one of, I guess, their weaknesses and using it to win.
The Capitol is oversensitive.
Yeah. I was like, wouldn't they just be like, wow, you're really smart for discovering the force field?
Right, like, should it surprise anyone that a force field encloses the arena?
Maybe it's because he didn't finish her off, and she, I don't know.
Hunger Games won. there were 22 deaths, one victor, and one MIA.
Yeah, someone ran out of the arena because there was no force field.
That'd be the first thing I would try.
Hunger Games 2, force field!
Everyone's running for the cornucopia. I'm just trying to get as far away from the center as I can.
Get the hell out.
Like, there's gotta be, and there's an edge to this thing somewhere.
But the main significance is you learn that Haymitch also won his games through some act of rebellion, even though we don't really think it was that rebellious. Right. which ties him to Katniss and PETA. And I guess if you're, like, one of those people who's just constantly looking for hints in a book, might signal to you that he's part of the rebellion. Because, like I said, at the end of the book, in the last couple pages, you learn that there was this big, allied conspiracy group who is gonna bust everyone out of the arena and save them, and Haymitch was part of that. So, you kind of learn he has the revolutionary in him, and then you discover that he was on the part of...
I was gonna shift gears. I think you covered it pretty well.
Sina!
Yes?
The poet. He gets torn to pieces in the act two of Wait a Minute. Wrong work of fiction.
We knew he was, very sympathetic to Katniss in the first book. I think we even strongly suspected that he was not the biggest fan of President Snow in the Capitol, right?
Yeah, he
was kind of rebellious. He was showing hints of rebelliousness.
I was gonna say, his appearance alone kind of hints that, because the Capitol's all about, like, these really garish fashions and makeup and body art and all sorts of stuff, and Cinna just wears, like, simple clothing, and she mentions, like, the only thing he ever wears is this gold eyeliner.
Right.
So, like, that's his only decoration, which for the Capitol is really, really unusual.
Right.
Like, he should be way more decked out. So just from, like, his appearance, you can kind of guess he's not really buying into the whole Capitol thing.
True. Good literary technique spotting there.
Thanks.
But he goes into definitely open defiance of the Capitol. Yes. In his design of Katniss's wedding gown.
Yeah, so President Snow tries to send an FU to Katniss by making her wear her wedding gown the interviews the day before she has to go fight in the Hunger Games, which is very rude. As we've already established, President Snow is incredibly rude. And then Cinna turns the FU back on the Capitol by designing the gown so that when she spins, it turns from a wedding gown into essentially like a Mockingjay gown.
Yeah. And so I think if I had done that, I'd be walking around with an itchy spot on the back of my head where I assumed a bullet was going to go.
Yeah. I feel like I'd have a gun on me or something. Okay, I'm going to run off now. And we should mention that the significance of Katniss's dress turning into a Mockingjay dress is that she wore this Mockingjay pin in the first Hunger Games last year. Well, her first Hunger Games last year. And it's become a symbol for the Resistance. So Cinna's basically, like, straight up announcing his alliance with the Resistance by turning her into the Mockingjay. And a lot of people already consider her that symbol of, like, hope and resistance anyway, so...
Yeah, and there's a little bit of question within the Capitol as to whether that's, with the people of the Capitol, of whether that's a fashion statement,
because
it's kind of trendy to wear the Mockingjay, but I think it would be impossible to be a person of any prominence whatsoever and not have some awareness that that's not a smart thing to do.
Yeah. If nothing else, President Snow knows what's going on.
Right.
That's who that's directed at anyway.
And he's the guy who, you know, commands the death squads.
Yeah. Yeah, so again, maybe not the smartest move. He is trying to help, though.
Yeah, in his own way.
He said he channels his destruction toward himself or whatever.
One of those martyrs for the cause or something.
Yeah, he gets attacked right before Katniss gets sent to the arena, so...
Yep.
We actually don't know his fate.
True. Get another FU.
To Katniss. Yeah.
By President Snow.
Yep. Okay. We'll go ahead and talk about Finnick, at least. he's one of the previous victors, and I would say the most important of the previous victors in this book, who gets sent into the arena. He is a big, strong, handsome dude.
He is Spartacus.
Yeah. He apparently won his Hunger Games because his sponsor sent him a trident, and then he murdered everyone with a trident, which is insane.
It's some mad trident skills.
He is also on the side of the rebellion, but is hiding it. I don't know if we've really mentioned this. I think we have, but everyone who's on the side of the rebellion in this book does everything they can not to tell Katniss about it.
Or to even hint.
Yeah, I mean, there are theoretically a couple hints, but they're not really enough for you to put anything together.
Yeah, well, like, Plutarch was setting her up to be let in on it, maybe eventually months down the road if she seemed to be savvy enough to be it with it.
Yeah. By showing her a watch with, like, a Mockingjay inscribed on it.
Right.
It's pretty cryptic hint.
It's a very small step in that direction. I'd probably just waiting to see how she'd react to it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, aside from that, nothing. And, and that hint is not, certainly not one that I consider to be a big enough hint to actually, like,
pick up on it, figure it out.
To count. Like I said, it was laying the long-term groundwork.
Yeah, and, like, you know that Haymitch wants Finnick to be allies with Katniss because he gives Finnick his, like, his golden bangle that he was wearing. And then when Katniss sees it in the arena, she's like, oh, Haymitch must have given that to him and wants me to be allies with him. So, okay, we know that he wants them to be allies, but we don't really know why. Is certainly, like, that's not enough to say, okay, there's a rebellion going on to break them out of the arena.
Yeah.
I mean, you could maybe guess that it's, like, they're trying to come up with a giant alliance and say F you to the Capitol and not kill each other. That's possible, but not necessarily the whole, like, rebel thing, so. That's really just, like, a surprise at the end of the book.
Yeah.
And so for Finnick's part, like we said, big, strong, and handsome, and so he is a seducer type, apparently sleeps with a ton of ladies at the Capitol, but he is really just in love with a girl back home who apparently snapped during her own Hunger Games.
Again, fair.
Yeah, not probably not surprisingly. And has never really been the same since. Well, you know, none of them really have, so.
Yeah.
And there's some other people, but I kind of want to skip them. I actually want to talk about this rebellion thing a little more.
Sure.
Because Ben and I were talking about it before the recording began, about they didn't want to tell Katniss about it because they weren't sure she could act through it well enough. I don't remember their exact explanation of why they didn't tell her ahead of time. But essentially, they just didn't trust her with the information. And Ben and I thought that was really stupid.
It definitely doesn't give her enough credit for intelligence. Like, she might not be the most naturally charming person on camera, but I just don't know what they were afraid of. They thought she was going to wander into her interview and just tell everybody, oh, these Hunger Games are going to be the best ones ever because the rebels are going to blow a hole in the wall of the arena and pull us out.
Oh, they're totally safe.
And it'd be great.
What?
President Snow will never see it coming. This is being broadcast to the whole nation.
Oh, shit. Can you edit that part out?
Right.
Like, she's not stupid. And, I mean, we were discussing how, you know, she has been acting pretty much the entireties of book one and two, putting on the show of her relationship with PETA and all the other stuff she's been doing. Like, she's definitely been putting on a face to the Capitol, so she's capable of it.
Wasn't her acting skill the only thing that actually saved her in the first book?
Yeah. Like, is the reason sponsor center stuff. And
as much credited as she gets for bow and arrowing things.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't really get why they thought she couldn't handle that information. And I think, you know, the way it's written now, there's a sense of urgency in that she doesn't know if she can trust people, and, like, she's trying to keep Pete alive, and she's, like, trying to figure that out. So there is, like, some intrigue in that aspect of it. But if she had known about the rebellion ahead of time, there'd be a sense of urgency and intrigue of, like, okay, how are we going to get out of the arena? How are we going to try to save everybody? How are we going to, you know, do this or whatever? And maybe everyone is still sacrificing their lives to save PETA because they know, like, keeping him alive is the only thing that's going to keep her alive and mentally sound, and she's really the one who needs to make it out. So, I mean, I still think you could have an intriguing, compelling plot, even if Katniss does know about the rebellion.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this kind of leads into this point, but I wondered why the tributes, who seem to be somewhat unified going into the actual games, didn't just meet at the cornucopia, all shake hands, sit down, and wait to see what happened.
Yeah, refuse to fight each other.
That's actually what kicked off our Hunger Games prequels earlier.
Yeah, maybe there was a previous Hunger Games where people did right. that.
It's like Hunger Games 13.
Or like
the tributes all just sat down in the middle of the arena and waited for the capital to do something, and then were probably all eaten by poisonous mutated bears or something.
Yeah. you know, or even if the couriers refuse to make allies, like, just have everyone gang up on them and then refuse to fight each other. Like, it seems like a majority of the people are not really that into killing each other, so
yeah, they're all there for survival. So what happens if you take out the offensively oriented players, like, as a group?
And it is kind of interesting to think about how the book could be from that regard, because Katniss does mention that a lot of them in their interviews are kind of vaguely criticizing the Capitol and questioning how wise these Hunger Games are, and, you know, the night before after their interviews, they all join hands as a symbol of unity, and then the next day they just all start slaughtering each other.
Yeah.
I was kind of confused of, like, how those two things, like, worked together.
Yeah, that was a little strange. That was just a little strange.
Yeah.
It's like when whoever kicks off the killing starts doing it, you think that the rest of them would just be like, "Ah, dick, move," and put him down.
Dude, don't do that.
Take his weapons away and throw him in the water. Every time he climbs back on shore, just throw him back in.
Take off his flotation belt and throw him in the water. Hope he can swim.
Ready to play nice yet?
So, yeah. Those were mine and Ben's criticisms of different ways the plot could have been handled.
It's okay. We're going to make a pilot of Hunger Games 1 and then have a 73-episode serialized TV show.
There you go.
Just the 73 games before this one.
Leading up to Katniss. The only problem with that is, you know, they don't get, like, really fucked up until she's a part of them. So you couldn't really ever do anything, like, too crazy with them.
Well, yeah, that would be the interesting part of a series like that. Every episode would have a downer ending.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you could, like, put weird subversive things into each Hunger Games, and those are just, like, the parts the Capitol cut out and, like, doesn't show people.
True enough. I mean, the early ones had to have been interesting, because it kind of, the implied history of Panem is that the Capitol, after something, the Capitol became in charge of all these districts, and the districts rebelled under whatever the previous shitty system was, and it got put down, and part of their punishment was having to do these Hunger Games. But that means that the first year they did these Hunger Games, they didn't really know what they were doing yet.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't have the time to prepare, like, this amazing arena. The first one was probably just a bunch of kids with weapons in a cage with peacekeepers holding guns to their families' heads or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to explore.
Watch them evolve.
That would be, like, the most depressing show of all time, though.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a terrible... Well, it might be a good show, but it would not make you feel good.
It would be kind of fun. Well, I keep using the word fun. I don't think I've used it correctly.
As a writer, it could be fun.
Interesting. Like, you could have whoever wins in episode one, like, pop up again in episode five as a mentor, and, like, there would be some interesting things you could do with previous Hunger Games winners coming back in later episodes.
That's right.
So it would be kind of interesting.
That's right. Let's milk this Hunger Games thing for all it's worth.
Suzanne Collins would be like, I'm suing the shit out of you. Whatever.
Also, good luck finding the TV network that's ballsy enough to have 73 downer ending episodes.
Of children killing each other. Woo! Yeah. True enough. Let's talk to HBO. Alright. So I guess I'll touch on moral issues quickly. I just wanted to bring up feminism real quick, since we always bring it up. Like we were saying, the narrative of Katniss feels authentic, she feels like a real girl, and that overall these books tend to have a pretty good split of male and female characters. One of the things that Suzanne Collins does to kind of even it out right away is that each district has to give up a male and a female tribute, so right away the Hunger Games is gender equal. And, you know, Katniss has her mother and her sister, who she cares about. And I actually realized that we didn't really talk about any of the other female characters besides Katniss. Which is kind of interesting, because a couple of the small characters in the book that I really enjoy are female characters that we didn't really talk about.
Right.
So I feel like our discussion of characters maybe made it sound more lopsided than it is, or maybe the books are... This book is slightly skewed toward male presence. I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up real quick. So, we did have something quick to say about racism, because they visit District 12, and you guys remember Rue from the first book, who Katniss made friends with. She was from District 11 and was black, which...
Don't tell Twitter. They'll be mad. They'll be angry.
Freak out. But Thresh, I think, the other guy from District 11 in Book 1 was also black. And then they go and visit District 11, and it seems like a lot of the people there, possibly all of them, are black. Because I'm pretty sure, like, the tributes who end up participating in this book's Hunger Games are both black. And that made Ben and I... That led us to wonder, is District 11 all black people?
Is that the plantation district?
Yeah, and it's in the south, and they all do farming, like, forced to do farming and barely have enough to, like, is this a slave district? And then that made us both feel really icky.
Yeah, I was like, I'm very uncomfortable.
Like, because that's what, if you think about it, that's what it kind of comes across as. Like, if it's predominantly African-American in the south, they're doing a ton of giant farm labor work, and they're very heavily and carefully guarded. Like, that sounds pretty much like slavery.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like the... It's not like living in any of the districts is fantastic, but...
Yeah, and to a degree, all the districts are enslaved, but...
The linkage of racism and slavery in this country... makes that kind of hard to ignore.
Yeah.
Extra creepy.
Yeah, so just let that add to your ick factor. And then, of course, the classicism with the districts versus the capital is really obvious.
Right.
Being discussed over and time again, how everyone in the capital has everything they want, and the people in the districts are definitely wanting.
If you wanted to write a longer version of the book, you could probably even incorporate some of that into the districts, because it's mentioned that there are some people with some extra privilege, and, you know, it makes me a little curious about how, say, the mayor of District 12 became the mayor.
Uh-huh. And how he has, like, a lot more privileges than the people in District 12, but so, then at the same time, he doesn't have, like, certain privileges the people in the Capitol have.
Right. So is he an appointee?
Yeah, they make him be the mayor.
Do they have hereditary mayor?
Was his dad the mayor? Did he get voted into office? Doesn't seem like the people who are 12 can vote.
Say, surely there was not an election.
So, what's going on there? Yeah, that's a good question. Like I said, you know, his daughter points out, well, we can't take my mom to the Capitol because you can't go there without an invite.
Right.
So, he's the mayor, he has a television, they have enough food and money, they have clothes and warmth and all that. But, like, they still can't, you know, leave the district without permission.
Yeah, so if he's an appointee, he's not like a Roman proconsul with all the privileges of the Capitol.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they don't send people from the Capitol to the district to rule it, because then someone from the Capitol would have to live in District 12.
That's true.
You can't have that, no. So, the other question I had was, because the people in the Capitol, a lot of the times, just seem ignorant and not necessarily, like, evil people. It's more like the government's the evil entity.
That's how it comes across to me.
And the people are just don't get it.
Or sheep.
Yeah. And they get super attached to the people who win the Hunger Games, and in this particular version where it's all previous victors, they all seem, they're just crying and fainting and super upset all throughout these interviews, you know, at these people they've been following for years who are all going to go into this arena and die. And because we were from Katniss's point of view, once she's in the arena, we just know what's happening in the arena. But it made me wonder, is anyone in the Capitol rebelling because of the nature of these games? Does that, like, snap anyone to their senses? Like, do they get through to anybody?
Could be more sinners out there, right?
Yeah. It kind of made me wonder if, like, you know, after the games started with the rebellion in full swing, if there were people in the Capitol who started working against the government because they were so pissed that, you know, it took this to make them realize that this was a bad idea.
Right.
I don't know. So, that was something I was kind of wondering. I just realized we didn't really talk about President Snow, except for just calling him a dick. Like, a bunch of times. Do we want to talk about him more, or?
Is there more to say? I mean, he's a brutal, violent...
Dictator.
Dictator guy, and he puts on that weird, like, classy, friendly veneer sometimes, but it doesn't fool a single person.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what's going on there.
Yeah.
And he smells like blood and roses.
Yeah. He always carries his roses around and apparently smells like blood for some reason. So he's a vampire, clearly.
Right.
Obviously.
Obviously. Right.
All right. I just wanted to make sure, because... themes.
Oppressive totalitarianism is bad.
Yeah, pretty obviously. there's a theme throughout of resistance and hope and, you know, freedom.
And maybe a little bit of being passive in the face of evil.
On the
flip side.
Good point.
Because the people of the Capitol are, because like you mentioned, the people of the Capitol are so obviously a contrast to the people of the districts. I guess I mentioned earlier the idea of kind of being having to live life under a false front. I don't know exactly how to phrase that better than that.
Yeah, but really, you were saying Katniss definitely suffers from that, having to put on this face for the Capitol and then live the rest of her life the way they expect her to.
Yeah, and I kind of think, I mean, just, that implies that a lot of people probably have to do similar things.
And so, again, like, you know, they're doing it to try and protect the people that they care about, but at the same time, if you do that, you're also being passive in the face of evil and not standing up for the right things.
Right.
But it's a tough choice, I understand. There is a symbol in this book. We've already talked about it, but the Mockingjay. Katniss as a Mockingjay, kind of in and of herself, for the pin she wore and for the dress, her dress that turns into a Mockingjay dress. and becomes a symbol of the resistance. At one point in the book, she runs into a couple of escapees from District 8, and they have a piece of bread with a Mockingjay stamped into it, and that's kind of their proof that they're on the side of the rebels and, like, on Katniss's side. And that's when she really first starts learning the significance of herself as a symbol and really what's going on with the resistance movement in the first place. So it's pretty important. And for anyone who knows, book three is actually called Mockingjay, and that symbol becomes very, very apparent in book three. It's used quite a lot.
To kill the Mockingjay. The third book.
Oh, no. I'm trying to wonder how Mockingjay and Kill a Mockingbird would work. Like, if you underwove their plots and not just the title.
Well, Boo Radley could have a good reason to be all quiet and withdrawn, because he could have...
been a previous victor.
Yeah, he could be a previous winner.
What about Scout? Maybe Katniss volunteers in place of Scout. Those books do not really fit that well together. The plots of them.
No. The plots, or maybe the themes.
One big point of interest that we didn't really touch on yet is we mentioned there are 12 districts. They're originally 13. After District 13 was destroyed, the Capitol started the Hunger Games. And we learn the rumor that District 13 is still around in this book. And at the very end of it, we discover that yes, District 13 is, in fact, not destroyed, but still there.
Dun, dun, dun.
We don't really know why yet. There are some theories flying around that maybe they were involved in nuclear production and threatened the Capitol with some weapons and managed to get to go off and do their own thing. Possibly.
Maybe they seceded and flew out to space.
I will say, though, that still is kind of a dick move to be like, oh, we have nuclear weapons, so let us go. And then you just, like, passively sit by and watch the other 12 districts, like, endure hardship in the Hunger Games for 75 years and don't fucking do anything.
True enough.
That's pretty rude. District 13.
Ooh, that could be in our pilot episode.
Yeah, totally.
The withdrawal of District 13 and the first Hunger Games.
Yep. It's happening, guys. So get ready for it. Okay. Anything else before we kind of move into wrap-up?
Nope.
Strengths and weaknesses of the writing. The main weakness for me in this book is that the plot arc is, like, not great. The story is still interesting, and I think it's still a compelling read. Like, I still sit down and just read right through it. But the pacing's kind of weird, because it starts off like, oh, we're going to go on the victory tour, and you get a lot of time in District 11, and, like, get a sense of the oppression there. And then she just kind of goes, and then we visited all of the other districts. You're like, okay. And then she moves on to the next thing, and that kind of rushes through. And so time tends to kind of, like, randomly go by quickly, I think, so that Suzanne Collins could fit all the events she wanted to fit into the book. And sometimes that's kind of uneven.
Yeah, I mean, I've read books where there are kind of numerous time skips, I guess. Actually, these Honor Harrington books I've been obsessing over the last few weeks are kind of a good example, because the distances between places are so far apart. You know, like, star systems. Because those distances are so great, if some events and background events and stuff are kind of needing to roll along between major plot points, there are frequently weeks or months in between things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the pacing of that world. Though on the flip side, I do kind of... would probably take some uneven plotting over, you know, three chapters about 3 weeks no one gives a shit about.
Yeah. And that's, see, that's the flip side. And then the book's short enough and it doesn't drag. It's still an interesting read. And, like, you could pretty much write an entire book about the Victory Tour, but only if, like, a lot of interesting stuff was going to happen on the Victory Tour. And if really the only interesting district is 11, then I guess there really isn't a need to talk about all the other districts.
Yeah, I mean, if it was, if the nature of the story, or I guess of the storytelling, more accurately, was slightly different. Like, if you're trying to write a fantasy novel, which has to be bloated and full of unnecessary scenes, then yeah, you would definitely, the first 200 or 250 pages of the novel would be the Victory Tour and each stop along the way.
I mean, the thing I would like about that is I want to know where all of the other districts are, because you never really get told.
Ah, yes.
Like, you know District 12's kind of in Appalachia, you know District 11's somewhere in the south, because it's warm in the winter, and you know District 4 is somewhere on a coast, because they have seafood.
Right.
And that's, like, that's about all you got. And I think we know the capital's in Colorado, because they mentioned it's, like, in that mountains.
Yeah. The electronics district has got to be in, like, Silicon Valley or something.
Yeah. And, I mean, District 7 is lumber, so it's somewhere with a lot of trees.
Yeah, it's not in Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, you can get, like, some vague ideas, but at the same time, like, I just want an official map. Really bugs me.
I bet if I googled map of Panem, I'd find something.
They're a bunch of fan drawings, but...
Yeah.
I want the real
one. I want the official map.
Suzanne Collins? So that's my first question for the series. Where are all the districts?
What is the geography of Pan Am? Also, I guess, does Senna live through his brutal beating?
Yeah, does he escape and join the rebels? We discover at the end they managed to save Katniss and Finnick, but didn't manage to grab Peeta, so what's going to happen to Peeta and the other people they didn't manage to get out of?
Yeah, for that matter, is the Resistance, or will the Resistance win? Can the Resistance win?
Oh, yeah, and then our last question was, why does President Snow smell like blood?
Yeah, what's up with that weirdness?
It's because he's a vampire, we already said it. So right. We answered that question.
That's true.
So your verdict.
I enjoyed the added sophistication, the political, I'm struggling with words, the politics involved in this book compared to the first one, which is more of a straightforward adventure story. I thought it was pretty much equally compelling, just a little more, maybe a little more adult in flavor, and I obviously didn't have a problem with the people being fucked up by their prior Hunger Games experiences.
Yeah, on this read-through, I actually was realizing and appreciating the political stuff more than I had on a previous read-through. I'm not really sure why that is, but I guess when the book became less about how are they going to get to the games and more of just like, well, what is she doing with all the, you know, other 75% of the book? I just started appreciating the political aspect of it more. So I like that the book rises above just the Hunger Games themselves. Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, if any of you... what am I doing?
I don't know.
What are you reading right now? Stop making me say dumb stuff.
I just started Under the Dome by Stephen King. It's about 5,000 pages long.
I'd say possibly appearing soon. On Novel Ideas. I'm doing that thing where I have a long book and I'm at the beginning of it on one podcast and the end of it on another one. So, Ashes of Victory by David Weber still.
More Honor Harrington.
The victory is here, the ashes are not, so I don't know what's going to happen.
So, if you would like to contact us, leave a comment, suggestions, anything like that, you can check out our website, www.novelideaspodcast.com.
Or you can email us, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We can be found on Twitter at novelideaspod.
And we're on iTunes. And if you listen to us there, then rate, review, all that good stuff.
Do all that stuff.
All that iTunes stuff.
iTunes stuff. So next week is Thanksgiving, but we are going to try and read a book and put out an episode. It's going to be a shorter book for the holidays. So we're going to read The Awakening by Kate Chopin. It's a classic, but when it was originally written, it was a kind of an original banned book. Yeah. It was considered too racy.
Ooh.
So
I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to some sexy times.
It was written in the 1800s, so looking keep that in mind.
Forward to some 19th century sexy times. I'm still waiting for that hardcore fucking after this week.
After PETA and Katniss left us and they're wanting.
Lame ass teenage kissing.
Boring making out.
Anyway, I think that's going to do it.
Yep.
And we'll see you next time. Bye. I decline to walk the line. They tell me that I'm lazy. Worldly wise, I realize that everybody